Hey, hang, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Grilling JR with the voice of wrestling, Mr. Jim Ross. Jim, how are you, man?
Conrad, I'm pretty good. I've had my football weekend was in the toilet. My Sooners got embarrassed, but never give up the ship. And, you know, I've become a pretty good Jags fan. What's over here? And they're a lot better than they were ever since I lived here.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for the Conn family, and I'm happy for the city of Jacksonville because it has invigorated this community. And I think that's great. You see more Jaguar merch and all that stuff. It's just kind of cool to be a part of right now because nobody really knows where we're going to go. We're 2-2, but I think we're going to be okay. We've got a good coach.
Yeah,
fundamentally sound, good coach.
Well, and we're all about good coaches here on the program, and you were one of the best coaches, and we're going to talk about one of the guys that you had a hand in his career that still has a legacy we're talking about to this day, and it's right around his birthday. Of course, as everybody's listening to this, it's Thursday, October 6th. Well, this coming Sunday would have been Eddie Guerrero's birthday, October 9th, 1967. His father and trainer, Gory Guerrero, were first-generation wrestlers and later a promoter, and his other sons, Mondo, Hector, and Chavo, were all, of course, in the wrestling business, too. I think Gory passed away in 1990. Did you ever get a chance to meet Gory?
Oh, yeah, I did. He was a really sweet guy, a smart guy, and very, very talented. You know, the Gory special and things like that that he invented are still being utilized today. I think it's pretty good accomplishment and a tribute. But his sons followed him into the family business, and they all attained various levels of success, but nobody approached the success that Eddie had. And the reason for that, Conrad, is as much as I respect the entire family, including Mr. Guerrero, who is simply a sensational talent, Eddie was in a league of his own.
And you actually got to work with Chavo and Hector in Mid-South, right? What was that like?
Good. You know, they grew up in the business. They knew all the do's and the don'ts. Don't come late. Don't come screwed up. Work hard. If you're going to put somebody over, do it the right way. Make them look good before they beat you type deal. But they were fine. Chavo was way ahead of Chavo Sr. What did they call him one time? Chavo Classic?
Yeah, that's right.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Hilarious.
He was on the original, I think it was the UWF show open, doing a moonsault. Now, this is many, many moons ago before moonsaults had 18 different names.
Right.
And so that was in our show open, and it was breathtaking. And I think it was him. I don't know how I remember this bullshit. I think he did the moonsault, Conrad, on a preliminary heel named Gustavo Mendoza.
Oh, wow.
I think Gustavo was a Puerto Rican gentleman. Good solid hand, by the way. Probably better than a lot of hands that are working today, fundamentally speaking. So, it was fun to work with those guys. You didn't have to tell them anything. They knew when to be at work. They knew how to process their assignment. And they got a lot of work for Cowboy. And I enjoyed working with them. They were very innovative. And I think that's what we saw from Eddie. Eddie took innovation to another level. And I don't know. It was just a joy to work with the Guerreros, all of them, including I get to see Vicky every week. She's remarried. I'm happy for her. She's just a sweetheart of a lady.
Yes.
But all of them are just super people, you know? So good experiences, good vibes from the Guerreros.
So Eddie debuts as an in-ring performer in 1986, working for CMLL as Mascara Magica. When did you first see Eddie come onto your radar? I know he pops up on WCW TV once in 1989. I think it's May of 1989 against Terry Funk. Would that have been the first time you would have seen him, or would somehow Eddie have been on your radar before?
No, I didn't see. Cowboy was not a major fan of CMLL and other Hispanic organizations. We didn't have access like today where you can, you know, go online and watch all the stuff you want to watch. We didn't have that opportunity back in those days. And, you know, then there's a situation where you got, if a guy's doesn't have a green card, you got to work on that. And some offices didn't want to do that because of the cost involved. But I think Terry Funk probably had as much to do with getting Eddie recognized on that level as anybody ever could, because Terry had so much clout, so much credibility. And so when Terry Funk spoke, we listened. Everybody listened.
He's only 21 years old here when he has this match with Terry Funk in May of 89. He does work a dark match for WrestleWar in 91, teaming with Ultraman. And I got to wonder, do you remember there being any push way back in the early 90s here, 89, 90, 91? We know that Eric is going to really lean into Lucha Libre for Nitro, but did it feel like WCW wasn't quite ready for that in 89, 90, 91?
Yeah, it may be so. I think a lack of product knowledge and the lack of overall where with it all, it just wasn't a priority. You know, we've talked about WCW various times, and until Eric came along, it was a train wreck, obviously.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Nonetheless, it wasn't on the radar like it became on the radar, which I applaud.
Let's talk a little bit about AAA, because Vicky and Eddie marry in 1990. Eddie's going to float back and forth between AAA and New Japan essentially until 1995. When he's over in New Japan, he's working as Black Tiger.
Right.
We've spent a lot of time talking about New Japan, and obviously your great history with New Japan, really helping bring them to an American audience, gosh, almost a decade ago. But AAA, or Tripla, as it's called below the border, we don't really talk about a lot on this program. What was your impression of the AAA presentation and Mr. Pena and the whole promotion?
Well, it was impressive. They built a hell of an organization. And I think just the prejudice of the good old boy aura of pro wrestling, where all the promoters are basically, you know, white ex-wrestlers. They built a... Well, we didn't give them the respect that they deserved, I don't think, in general. But when you saw those talents do the things that they did, and you knew that your audience would be mesmerized, because it would be new, totally new. And as I said on the show many times, wrestling fans love surprises and they love new.
Yeah.
And if your booking idea falls under one of those umbrellas, new and surprising, you're onto something. So it was, that's how I looked at that situation. Eddie was just, but you could, Eddie's work in Japan, as Black Tiger was amazing. And again, you get guys that go to Japan and they come back, and the Cowboys always looking for talent back in those days. And then WCW is always looking for talent, in that era. But there was no political issues in Cowboys area to bring Eddie Guerrero in. But I think that, in other territories and maybe, WCW might be following that category. I don't know. They changed smartly. Eric made that change. But you know, you just got to go where the talent is. You got to recruit the best players and get them on your field and get them in your game. And Eddie Guerrero was always, no matter what group he was in, Conrad, no matter what locker room he was hanging his clothes in that day, it's hard to say he wasn't the best performer in the locker room, period. That covers a lot of ground.
It does. Do you think that was in this early 90s era, was there a stigma against hiring wrestlers coming from Mexico? Was it just viewed as a totally different thing? Was it a size thing, not understanding the culture, the mask? What do you think it was?
Several of those boxes you just checked. Size was an issue for some. The green card component, the green card meaning you're able to live in America, even though you're not a citizen. That was another issue. Promoters oftentimes, Conrad, took the path of least resistance. And to get somebody that's, you know, I've heard Cowboy have this conversation a million times. Do you have your green card? C. Come on. You're hired. But that's an issue that a lot of fans don't think about, the political world. And of course now it's, you know, it's still a big issue, getting guys green cards and papers to stay in this country and so forth. But I think size had a lot to do with it. The language issue, if a guy couldn't speak understandable English, to bring him into a territory where promos are essential, was a little daunting. Cause you got to talk,
right?
You know, and that was the thing about Eddie. Eddie was a great talker. He had an accent. So what? I've been told I have an accent. I don't believe that, but I think I sound like I'm from Wall Street.
I love you.
JR Wall Street. That's my new gimmick. But I think there was a little bit of a stigma, and for the reasons I mentioned, and a lot of them just make common sense until, you know, you found a guy like Eddie who could speak English and who did have a green card and who was the most one. I don't know that I've ever seen a more talented in-ring performer than Eddie Guerrero. He had great matches, Conrad, with so many different guys in WWE when I was there, when I brought him in there. He had been waiting for this opportunity. He was hungry. He was angry. He's pissed off all the time, because he thought he had to wait too long to get his break. And I can't disagree with that.
Well, that's one of the things I want to ask about, because I know Chris Benoit got a tryout with the WWF in June of 95. Would that have been something that's on your radar because of Stu Hart? Or I'm just wondering, was Eddie even on the radar in 95?
Well, Benoit is a different, you're talking about an apple and an orange here. Benoit had those Calgary connections,
right?
And the Bret Hart connections. And Brett's opinion, carried a lot of weight, as it should.
Sure.
It still should, in my opinion. I think Bret Hart could be a tremendous asset to any pro wrestling company, in the world, because he's got it. He's a natural born leader and a coach, and he understands fundamentals.
Yes.
I love Brett. He's just a hell of a guy. He was always good to me when he didn't have to be, and when a lot of others weren't. Cause I was the new guy for WCW type deal. And I had to get over a lot of that stuff, but we did, but he was a challenging individual, Conrad, to, manage, because he had those demons that he had to control, and trying to control his own passion for waiting as long as he did for his major break on global television. He was a handful. And then again, the pills and things like that, that we had to delve into. You talk about your Conrad quote, deep dive.
Yeah.
I dove deep many times. I remember sitting in a locker room with Eddie reading his Bible with him. Mm. I'm not the most religious guy in the world. I'm not bragging about that. I believe in a higher power, and I'm not going to go into all that stuff. But bottom line is, you know, to me, that's where I could help him find some solace. I don't know how many talent relations, people went to a locker room and had somebody stand outside the door so nobody would interrupt you and listen to Eddie read his Bible or to talk to him about it. And when we would finish our little sessions, and him sharing, and a lot of it just turned into, how you feeling today? Or why are you down the dumps? Things are going great. Your match last week on Raw was unbelievable. It wasn't enough. But again, I think the pills had a little bit to do with that mood altering stuff, because I found Eddie to be a genuine joy to be around, except when he was Andre. That's what, I can't remember who told me this one. It might've been Benoit. It's either Benoit or Guerrero, or excuse me, Benoit or Malenko, Dean Malenko. He said, you know, Eddie could be challenging to manage, JR. And I said, I've grown to know that. But when he's Andre, you got to be careful, because that's when he blows up. He walks out, you know, he leaves and through. That was, I guess, either a different pill or drinking. I'm not sure. So, you didn't want to dealing with Andre Eddie was a daunting task.
Well, he makes a big splash during a very brief run in 95 in ECW. He winds up signing with WCW around the same time Nitro's starting up, along with Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko. It's interesting to me that all three of these guys are in ECW, AKA low-key WWE developmental, but they wind up going to the WCW side of things. Do you think Vince just, his viewpoint of what a wrestler was or what he was looking for, they didn't check certain boxes, or how do these guys wind up, you know, sort of slipping right through your fingers on the WWE side of things from ECW over to WCW?
5'8", 5'9", 5'10", lack of knowledge, product knowledge. You know, Vince didn't watch wrestling.
I see.
He watched very little. I would take tapes. I want to hire this guy, or I'm going to hire this guy, or I hired this guy. Once my track record and talent relations started getting established and we had a little success on some of these guys we were signing, he trusted me.
Right.
And when I say, when I brought, you know, Malenko and Benoit and Eddie was a separate deal. Saturn, I brought them all to Vince's house, and, they look like little kids going to the counselor's office. They're, you know, small. And that's what the first thing Vince said when they left. I like these guys. They seem to have a lot of passion, but goddamn, JR, they're small.
Mm.
And I said, but they wrestle bigger than they are. And Vince, as long as you've been in the business, you know exactly what I mean by that. Buddy Rogers was 5'10". He wasn't a bad hand.
Right.
I'm told.
Yeah, he did okay.
He did okay. You know, Dick the Bruiser was 5'8". Did all right.
Yeah.
Hung around a while, made a couple of bucks. So I said, there's exception to all these rules.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that they're a fresh face. They're going to push that. They believe that their opportunities are now, and that they have waited long enough to come to WWE, which is the Mecca at that time for sure. So, I want to hire them. And he said, we hired him. So, but Eddie came in on a separate deal. We always knew that the three guys I just mentioned, Ben Wall was the number one draft pick, so to speak.
I thought they all came together and then Eddie left and you brought him back after the drug stuff.
That might've been, it might've been Conrad, yeah. You know, better than I.
Okay.
That could be a fact. We liked all four of them, obviously.
Sure.
Eddie was a little harder to get along with.
Right.
He drove a little harder bargain. He wanted more money. And so we got him his money and we got him hired. So, but I think you're right about that. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has.
And I'm an old fart.
Well, the jump happens January of 2000. Was Jericho making the jump in 99? Did that sort of lay the groundwork here for these guys to make the jump, do you think?
Well, it didn't hurt anything because Jericho also was not 6 feet tall.
Right.
So I give the same line on Vince regarding Jericho that I did on these other guys. He wrestles bigger than he is.
Right.
And so the first rattle out of the box for Jericho, as we all can remember, his reveal in Chicago on Raw, interrupting the great one.
Right.
I think that's all that needs to be said, that we had full confidence that Jericho was going to be a player. And more importantly, perhaps, Dwayne Johnson believed that too, because there's no way in hell we would have a brand new guy interrupt the Rock if we didn't believe it was the right thing to do.
Right.
And Rock agreeing with that scenario and buying in and contributing to that creative.
Talk to me a little bit about Eddie coming in here, because he did have a pretty rough car crash. I think it was New Year's Eve, 1998. He winds up being thrown from the car. A lot of people assume, hey, that might be it for him. He battles his way back, comes back looking like $1 million. But you knew this was a guy who had, at times, flowed too close to the sun, or whatever sort of expression you want to make.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Was any of that addressed in the first initial meeting? I know that he's going to have a hiccup that we're going to get to in a minute where he has to leave and come back. But when he comes over with the group, is any of that stuff ever discussed as far as you recall?
Well, just in general, I would never talk to Eddie about his personal issues in front of those other three guys.
Right.
Or vice versa. No, or any combination thereof. They knew, all of them knew, and all the talents I hired knew, we have a drug policy.
Right.
So here's what it is. No secret. And so, you know, adhere to the policy and everything's cool. And that's kind of as far as we went with that deal. But I think my problem was at that time, I didn't have a full disclosure of just how bad Eddie's drug problem was. I hadn't heard a lot of stories from the road that, well, he went crazy here. He tore up a Marriott room, blah, 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 whatever. I didn't have that info, or if it even existed. So, but it was easy to see who the cream of the crop was in that group of four guys. And that includes Benoit, who I have great respect for as a wrestler. Eddie was in a different level, totally different level. The stuff he did with China, Conrad, we'll get to that stuff, but he just could have just on his feet. It could be funny. It could be dramatic. It could be mean. It could be a great, he sold great, great baby face. So much charisma. So Eddie was so special in that regard. I'm glad we're doing this show about him today.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
There's really not been a time in the business I can think of where four major players jump ship all at the same time. Of course, here in January of 2000, I guess the most recent thing we could think of in this era are Hall and Nash leaving the WWF and going over to the WCW side of things. From your perspective, did this feel as big to have these four talents come in your direction a few years later?
Well, pardon me. Sound like you, Connie.
Sorry about that.
That bad cold. He gave me a cold on the radio. What was the question again?
Well, just talking about the impact of these four coming in from WCW. Oh. How would you compare that to Hall and Nash going the other direction?
Well, I tell you, it's cornbread and dressing. They go together.
Yeah.
They're both successful entities, but they're different.
Yeah.
You got the big giant guys, you know, Hall and Nash are huge, super heavyweight type guys, 6'8", 6'7" for Scott, maybe. Kevin's right at 7 feet. They're different. If you're recruiting them, you're not recruiting them to play the same position that you would those four radical guys. Just not. They're
right.
Different wrestlers. They're going to play different positions. They're going to fulfill a different spot on the card, all in hopes that they will get to the top of the card. And we had a good idea who we thought would get to the top of the card at some point in time, and happy to have them on the team and roll with them.
Well, of course, they make a big splash here, January 31st, 2000, they're the focal points of the show. They're going to align with Cactus Jack, so they're going to be presented as baby faces. And the next night, they do a SmackDown taping, and unfortunately, this is where we would see Eddie Guerrero suffer an elbow injury doing the frog splash. Boy, you want to talk about...
Broke my heart.
Oof, bad luck.
Broke my heart, yeah. Man. It just, I was doing the commentary on that match, Lawler and I believe. And I knew when he hit, it was bad news. Now, how bad? I'm not a doctor. I can't do a diagnosis. If I could, I'd diagnose how long your quarterback's going to be out, and mine too. yours is probably got a better shot of getting back in than my guy, because they're going to be real careful on on concussion protocol, and they should. I get it. I don't want to sound like a football goof, which I am, but let's keep that to ourselves here, folks. I felt so bad because I knew, and this is selfish in a way, I knew that I had to face him, Conrad, when the show was over.
Yeah.
I had to go to his side and help and prop him up, for lack of a better term, and assure him that his job was safe. And it's funny, I had the same conversation with several guys, including Benoit, when he hurt his neck and had surgery. Yeah. So he was out. I made the call in the surgery to get him a surgery to so that he would be fixed permanently and not a temporary solution. And to do that, he had to be out almost a year. And to be able to pull that off, he had to be paid.
Right.
So at least we had that going for us in that regard, taking care of the talent, I hate to hear you think about that, Eddie thing. He just was so distraught. He just thought he'd worked all his life to get to the WWE, WWF, and now I'm done. So, cause he didn't know how bad his arm was hurt. He just knew it was hurting real bad. So, that was a huge setback for him mentally as much as physically. He was tough as anybody we had and would fight anybody we had. Andre Eddie was tough now. And he was fun to be around sometimes. You're on the other end of the argument. But that elbow thing was just, it's like, God dang, we all saw what we had. His electricity, his explosion, his charisma, his athleticism, all those things were right before our very eyes. And he was new. He was relatively young. So, and then this happened. It was just heartbreaking.
Well, as the story goes, of course, everyone remembers that the Radicals wind up losing their first match here in the company. But Meltzer would say even back then, they somehow wound up doing a tag match anyway, and Guerrero, in delivering a frog splash, appeared to have seriously injured his elbow, and it took him 15 minutes to get him out of the ring, causing him to lose a match he was scheduled to win, making the newcomers 0-2 against the WWF stars. They did some mic work to try and redo the stipulations for Triple H and Benoit in a non-title match, which went as originally planned with a ref bump, and Triple H tapping out to the crossface, but no referee there to see it. And then all coming back to get the win using a pedigree. The second night, all three losing the WWF talent, it buried the group that went in with size and interview strikes against them. Boy, and I guess that probably is going through your mind at least, when Vince was at least hesitant, saying, man, they're small, and then one of their top guys gets hurt the first night in. Even though you're trying to, encourage Eddie, hey man, hang in there, it's going to be all right. At least in your mind's eye, you got to be thinking, boy, Vince is going to think I told you so on some of this, is he not?
Oh yeah, I figured it was going to fly back in my face.
Yeah,
I told you they were too small. Yeah. I told you they couldn't persevere and withstand the physicality of this brand and bigger guys night after night. We don't have a roster of cruiserweights, nor are we going to. So, I thought, as they said one time on I Love Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
Yeah.
Cause I paid those guys well. They got good money coming in there. And cause I didn't want the money to be an issue with them, transferring from one brand to the other. I didn't want that to be an issue whatsoever. So they all got paid decently. And with the pay system there, then, they had a chance to make a whole lot more money than that. I remember hiring Chris Jericho, and I told him that I can't pay you what you're getting in WCW, but I could make you a whole lot more money. And he looked at me incredulously.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a guarantee, so you know what's the worst you're going to do. But the bottom line is that if you're healthy and you're booked in the house shows, and I'll use you in the house shows, don't mistake that. You'll make a whole lot more money than that. And, that was my pitch to Jericho, at least he just wanted to get out and he made the right move, obviously, because it just really launched. Not that he didn't have a launch pad prior to that, Conrad, but hey, walking out in Chicago and interrupting the Rock, boom, we're off to the races.
It's a big deal.
So And that was the same thing we thought would find the same success with Eddie and some of these other cats. But it was a sad day, man. Sad day. I was so brokenhearted about that deal. And not just because I figured I'd get my ass chewed out. I got my ass chewed out every day.
Right.
Come on. I'm here. Didn't eat me. He didn't eat me. He didn't beat me up. He just chewed my ass out. And I can handle that because I grew up with a father exactly the same way. You missed that tackle. How come you made a C in algebra? I love the guy and I still do. I miss him. But boy, he was tough. He watched too fucking many John Wayne movies. Put a stick in his mouth, crunch it down, and take that bullet out with a knife. Tough.
So let's talk a little bit about what's next for Eddie. The Radicals are going to turn heel on the very next Raw. It's coming down from Dallas. They're going to attack Cactus Jack and then have a big 10-man tag main event. Eddie's out, of course. He's injured. So he's going to assume the managerial role for a few weeks. Hey, so you're at least trying with Eddie. Hey, if you can't wrestle, we'll try to still keep you on TV, keep your brand out there, right?
Yep. That's the idea. Figure out another way. We've talked about this with the Austin case, Stone Cold Austin.
Yep.
They just wanted to say, I saw a tweet, I think yesterday or today about China or not, excuse me, Sable. And in there quoted me on one of our shows saying, you know, the audience was content. As a matter of fact, some giddy and some happy that they got to see her on television. Well, she's always presented in a very, sexy, provocative way. And for our primary audience of males 18 to 34, 18 to 49 and all that stuff, they were cool seeing that attire and seeing this woman who was nobody had ever seen anything quite like her in pro wrestling to that point. And now you got a situation in the business where everybody looks much very similar.
Yeah.
I think so. And the great thing I like about Tony Khan's booking is that different body types get different opportunities.
Yes.
They're all fair. They're all there, but you know, but he's open-minded to that. And, I think we don't have like divas. We have lady wrestlers.
Right.
And I love that. And they have varying body types. Back in the day with Sable, the wrestling business, when they talk about women, they were used to seeing, talking about Moolah and Mae Young and all these legends. And certainly nobody ever seen anything quite like Sable.
No,
I hadn't. I've been in business a long time. So, but that same basic thing. You try to figure out ways to get somebody on television so that their image isn't forgotten.
Well, the next day on Raw, we're going to see, or I guess we should mention before we talk about the night after WrestleMania, Eddie's back in time for WrestleMania at Anaheim, easy for me to say. And the Radicals lose to China and Too Cool at the show. And China gets the pin on Eddie. And we know they're going to be a big part of a story moving forward. But in this era, a guy who has, to your point, a chip on his shoulder, worked his whole life. He's finally at the big dance. This is the big opportunity.
Yeah.
First night in, injures himself. Now he's on the shelf. We're still going to try to keep him on TV, but the result is he's going to be more of a managerial character for a bit. Now he's finally at his first WrestleMania. Congratulations, but we're going to have you take the pin to this lady. How did that go over with Eddie?
I don't think it was a big issue as much as people thought it would be, or it could have been, or it might be. And it's been a company secret all these years. I don't recall that being a big issue. Now, obviously I'm not trying to sell you a bill of goods, Conrad, that he was okay losing,
right,
instead of winning his first match at WrestleMania. I'm not trying to sell that stuff. That ain't going to work. It's just not, you know, but point being is, He rose to the occasion. He was a team player. I had the same conversation with him once. I can't remember which pay-per-view it was. Some of our fans will remember where he was the opening match on the pay-per-view. And man, he was pissed off all day.
Yeah.
And it was one of those deals where I thought we may have to have another Bible study. we need to pray over this, my boy. I said, here, you don't understand the psychology of what we're doing here. And maybe you don't know as much about this business as you think you do right now, because you're thinking more egocentrically. And that is, you should do a match. You should have your match, win, lose, or draw, walk back through the curtain in the gorilla position and where Vince is sitting, and turn and look at all of them sitting there and say, follow that. That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Walk out of that son of a bitch like you're 6'5" tall, and that look, or even you might even say it, follow that, fellas.
Yeah.
Follow that.
Yeah.
And he understood that. He took that as a challenge, and it worked. Hey, whatever you got to do to get in the end zone, right?
Well, the very next day, after WrestleMania, we're going to see Eddie win the European title from Chris Jericho, thanks to China's help. And this is where we really start the whole Latino Heat Mamacita storyline between the two. And man, I don't think anybody expected that to be as awesome as it was.
I think it was a pleasant surprise, quite honestly. And a lot of talents, a lot of male talents specifically, would not have gone for it, because it was so much of the unknown. And they also knew that they're going to have to be competing for the spotlight with a female. Sounds like it's antiquated, and it is. It's not that way now, thank goodness. But then it was a little challenging. But Eddie could handle it. He had so much confidence in his own ability, and it also allowed him to demonstrate a side of him from an entertainment standpoint and a verbal standpoint that he had not gotten that many opportunities for. You know, when you're a masked man in Japan and you don't speak Japanese, you're not getting a lot of promo time. Just not. So I was pleasantly surprised with it. And what made me think it might work is, after about one or two outings, I saw that China and Eddie were having a lot of fun together. And more often than not, when talents are having fun and they buy into the creative concept, and more importantly, they contribute to it, you got a shot there. And we realized we had a shot there, and it got over more than certainly I realized it might.
There's so many fun moments, you know, during this era we see for the first time. The low rider being driven to the ring, Eddie at the Playboy Mansion. Was it a challenge for Eddie? You know, we've heard a lot about, like, Rick Rude didn't like the idea of having Bobby the Brain Heenan as a manager. And that, to me, just blows me away. Like, what? He's one of the greatest talkers of all time. But from a Rude perspective, yeah, but it takes away from me, and I can talk, and I don't need him. I get that. Now you've got China, who's become one of the biggest stars in the entire company, and Eddie's going to be paired with her, which I could see how he would be, on the one hand, excited about. It's something creative. She is a big star. But at the same time, he probably feels like, wait a minute, is she going to be the star and I'm standing behind her, or do you have to navigate that with him at all?
No, it was never talked about. It was not an issue. They became a unit.
Yeah.
They became a pair, and being great workers that Eddie was, he understood his role. Everybody's got a role, Conrad, in the business. Everybody's got a role. Like right now, people say, well, JR, why aren't you on Dynamite? Well, because the decision was made to help build. We want to build Rampage. We want Rampage to grow. And I want to be one of the guys that helps Rampage grow. I enjoy doing that show. I don't have a problem with it at all. We got a lot of live Rampages coming up on Friday nights on TNT, and I'm excited about it. I've done 1 hour shows, lots of them, probably more than anybody else working in the business right now. And I've done 2 hour shows, as you well know, but it's just my role right now, and I'm happy with it. And I think Eddie just saw the same thing. This is his role right now, and it can be used like a launch pad, because once we discover that Eddie Guerrero has a personality, Conrad, he's got a personality and he wants to share it, we've got a better opportunity for the return on our investment. And that's what we kept talking to Eddie about. Use this as the next place before you get to the next place, because there's going to be another next place for you.
So Eddie and China are going to split up in storyline after Guerrero accidentally pins her in a triple threat match to win the IC title. And then he's caught in the shower with two of Godfather's ladies. This, don't get me wrong, is very much sports entertainment, but it's really one of the first times we get to see Eddie display this amazing charisma. Right. And this is probably what helps sell Vince on Eddie more than anything else, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of guys that were hanging, that were Eddie's buddies, were not shocked that we were discovering this amazing personality from this gifted worker who happened to be 5'8". Okay. And I, in my conversations with Eddie, and you know, talking about his brothers working for Cowboy and, you know, just breaking the ice and him being impressed that I had a working knowledge of his father, things like that. We bonded in that respect. And that's why he's such a particularly, this is such a emotional show for me, because you know, Eddie and I, we bonded.
Right.
And we went through some rough waters together, Conrad, I'm telling you. So, in any event, it's, I just thought that his work with China opened everybody's eyes that we got a player here. And we know we got a wrestling player. We know he can do it more than anybody we've got in a roster if called upon. But, he was just so gifted, and we had some of those gifts had never been unwrapped.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
So the Radicals get back together, and then Billy Gunn defeats Eddie Guerrero for the IC title in November of 2000. We're going to see Eddie take some time off for a hamstring injury, and it feels like he's kind of floundering for a bit, but he does win the European title from Test at WrestleMania 17. And Malenko said in WWE's Eddie documentary that he, Benoit, and Saturn could see a real problem with Eddie starting to develop around the spring of 2001. And they even said they pulled you aside at a TV taping to tell you about it without Eddie's knowledge.
Right.
And I'm sure that, you know, there is a contingent of our listeners who would say, oh, they're snitches, but this comes from a loving place. You're trying to help your friend. You're trying to get him help. You got some really good friends to be looking out for you here. What do you remember about this moment when they pulled you aside and said, hey,
They pulled me aside, we were at a venue at a building where we were having a show that night. I don't remember where it was. We need to talk to you. So my mind went automatically to talent relations guy, and they're not happy with their pay. I was like that dog that's been hit in the head with a club. You know, when you see your owner pick up that club, you kind of go someplace else or you start cowering down. But they told me what the reason was for our conversation at this point in time. And Eddie was very good about hiding things. Eddie was good about going off to a locker room and not being seen the rest of the day. So we had to have a chat, and I didn't tell him that his friends smartened me up. That just causes another issue.
Yes.
And I didn't trust them. He didn't trust me. I'm going behind his back, all this other shit. So those guys stood up for Eddie. They loved him. And they showed their love by reaching out and hopefully getting Eddie some help.
Well, it doesn't happen right away, because a few weeks after this, I guess Eddie showed up in Minneapolis in no condition to perform. Meltzer had this to say. This is from the July 11th, 2001 issue of the Observer. Guerrero, 33, was sent home because of the belief he was in no condition to perform on Raw in Minneapolis. The descriptions of his condition were really bad. He was scheduled to wrestle Matt Hardy. Jeff had replaced him in the King of the Ring qualifier. He's basically gotten the same directive that Shawn Michaels got. There's no timetable at this point on his return, and his angle involving Matt and Lita has been dropped. Guerrero has been somewhat injury plagued ever since coming back too soon after a very serious auto accident on New Year's Eve of 1998. He's kept quiet about having a very bad back, as it was said to have been in a real bad situation. So perhaps you can see Meltzer trying to read the tea leaves. This guy had a bad accident, came back too fast, maybe has started to over-medicate in order to make the towns, and now his friends are worried about him, huh? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, fair to say. I think that's an accurate assessment of it.
The next week, Meltzer would say Guerrero will return if he successfully completes rehab. His problems are believed to involve the use of prescription painkillers, which is obviously something quite common in wrestling. Guerrero's problems may date back to his auto accident and coming back too quickly in WCW. With four noted drug issues coming up publicly in the company in just the past 3 months, Jim Ross has said the company is still not thinking about doing comprehensive drug testing as it did from late 91 through early 96. In an interview with Slam Wrestling, JR said, "We do drug tests upon cause, or we take appropriate action upon cause. We had a situation where, in our view, Eddie Guerrero was unfit to work and we took action. He's in therapy. I don't know what else we could do with him." So let's talk about that. What do you remember about the whole, "Hey, we love you, we care about you, but you got to go get treatment"?
I have one option.
Yeah.
I was wrong. I had two options. I can get rid of you.
Yeah.
Which solves nothing.
Yes.
It takes a great talent and buries him even deeper. And Eddie was so emotional. He was so, he was sensitive. And so he, you know, the two choices I had was, okay, see ya, or let's get you help. Let's fix what's wrong. But in order to do that, you know, with the old cliche, it takes two to tango, but he was willing. He was willing. He wanted to get better. He was tired of being sick. He was tired of being dependent on painkillers. And I didn't, you know, I told him, I said, if we got to get a surgery or we got to fix something physically, we'll do that. You're not going anywhere. You're still young, man. So let's get you healthy. That's the biggest issue I had, was getting Eddie Guerrero healthy. Because I knew if I got him healthy and he came back reinvigorated and refocused, that we had a player, big time player, as good as we would have on the roster.
Well, we do need to at least talk about the drug testing stuff. When do you remember the opinion changing there? I mean, you say, "Hey,
society." Go ahead. I'm sorry, Connor. Go ahead. Well, society has such an impact on change.
Yes.
And the more aware that the American public got in performance enhancing drugs and other sports, you know, it's just become a bigger issue. The radar of what's hot, what's not, and what you got to address now or what you got to address next week never changes. And that job was a never ending scenario of solving problems. And, you know, I had the joy of managing a great talent roster that I still believe that Attitude Era talent roster and subsequent next two or three years was as good as the business has ever seen. Because you don't find rocks in Austin's. They're Tom Brady. They're once in a lifetime athletes.
Right.
So, my goal was to get Eddie healthy. I saw the hurt in his eyes. I saw the pain he had. I cried with him. I hugged him. He hugged me. I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole because I'll get too emotional, quite frankly and honestly. But that was my goal, Conrad. Let's get Eddie healthy. So what do we got to do? And that's what we tried to do.
Let's talk about what's next for Eddie. Unfortunately, he's being set up to return to TV November 2001. But it doesn't happen. He gets a DUI. He has an auto accident at 3:20 in the morning on November 9th in Lando Lakes, Florida. 2 days later, he gets the call. Johnny Ace is cutting him loose. Supposedly, he had a $250,000 a year downside guarantee. Meltzer speculating was a 3-year contract. And that's a wrap. Meltzer would say he had flown into Cincinnati after his arrest and worked the Heartland Wrestling taping on November 11th in Jefferson, Indiana, talking earlier in the day with WWF management, at which point Vince McMahon had not yet made a final decision. He was given the news and flown home late the next night. It's the third termination in recent months due to drug or alcohol problems, following on the heels of Brian James, who we know as Road Dogg, and Brian Lawler, who we knew as the Grandmaster Sexay. So, boy, it feels like you guys have to set an example here. You've clearly drawn a line in the sand, but folks are dropping like flies. Is this when you started to think, man, maybe we do need to implement some testing or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We got burned enough.
Yeah.
And all the guys that I hired, the three guys that you just mentioned, they all could work.
Yes.
They're all talented as hell. They could play the game.
Yes.
But again, it's hard sometimes, Conrad, without testing, to determine how deep a guy or a gal may be into the pill bottle.
Right.
Just as a hypothetical, the booze bottle, whatever, a bottle, a bad bottle. And so unless you have some benchmark, you don't know, you're guessing. And this is not something you want to guess about, as this story will end.
So he had just started back on tour the previous weekend. He had been out for several months for drug rehabilitation. And according to police reports, he crashed into the gate at a relatively slow speed at the Arbor Apartments where he lives. When the deputies approached him, they smelled alcohol on his breath, noticed he was slurring his speech. He failed two breath tests. He wasn't injured. There's only $500 in damage to the gate. And he's released after posting bail. And he's 34 years old, and his friends have said that he was despondent, at least as of late, while he's at home, because his wife, while he was in rehab, separated from him and moved herself and their kids to Arizona. So of course we're talking about Vicky Guerrero. She's had enough as well.
Yeah.
This is not a good time in his life. And really it's a testament to Eddie, because this could have gone the other way, Jim.
Yeah.
Could have known.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the over under might've been take the over.
Yeah.
He ain't gonna make it.
Right.
Vicky did something very brave, very courageous. Take their two beautiful daughters and get about as far away from Florida as she could. And she knew Eddie better than anybody. And I'm just saying to you that, I think she did what she thought was right. I can't disagree with her. Maybe that was the wake up call that Eddie needed. I don't know, but, she made the only call with two little girls that she believed was the right thing to do at that time. It was heartbreaking for everybody involved.
It's tough, man. He's publicly admitted to being manic depressive. He, unfortunately developed a reputation for being addicted to pain pills, Vicodin in particular. And that all came from an auto accident that we talked about in WCW. That's according to the Observer. Did you feel like, with the benefit of hindsight, maybe, or maybe even you knew at the time, me releasing him right now, it's not necessarily just wink, wink, to protect the company, but we might be saving this young man's life.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's no simpler than that, Conrad.
Yeah.
That's exactly what my goal was. I said it here several times. My goal was to save Eddie's life and to get Eddie healthy. We knew what we had when he got healthy. We knew what we would have. You know, everybody gets it, but it's going to be somewhere along the way. He's got to participate. You got to contribute, and you got to try, and you got to want to be clean and sober. And of course, the jury was out. We're not sure he can do that right now.
Let's talk about what he does for the next few months. He wrestles for Ring of Honor. He wrestles for Ian Rotten's IWA Mid-South, World Wrestling All-Stars over in Australia, even some shots in New Japan. Did you have some sort of a path for him to return? Are the marching orders, hey, Eddie, we'd like to see you do this for that long, and then we can talk about coming back? Or do you give him some sort of path to work his way back?
Yeah. Clean and sober.
Yeah.
Through testing. And, that was it. So it's not complicated.
Right.
But we had to, again, we didn't have a particular benchmark based on our policy at that point in time.
Gotcha.
I'm glad that we changed the policy. You got to have a benchmark. Where are you? And now, you know, I think any wrestling company that signs a talent should strongly consider pre-contract signing drug tests. And maybe they all do. I don't know this. I'm out of that loop, man. I just said but yeah, you just gotta hope that you can salvage this guy. And luckily enough, it wasn't over.
Are you touching base with him every so often? Is he calling you? What does that look like? Do y'all keep in touch?
Yeah, it was sporadic, but I wasn't going to lose touch.
Right.
I didn't want him to think, okay, we got a drug addled guy. We're washing our hands of this deal. We're done. That's it. We're done. I never did this.
Yeah.
Never. And on him anyway. So I knew how badly he wanted to be clean and sober. But boy, it was sure challenging for him. He had these, and what you mentioned and that he had in his book, I think of what you said, his anxiety,
yeah,
his depression, you know, there were medicines that he could take to address those issues, but you got to know that there are issues of this specific, regard before he can get the right help and the right meds and the right everything. So it was, boy, these brings back so many stories, so many memories, nighttime conversations, early morning conversations.
What are you talking about late at night with Eddie?
Positive motivation for me, you know,
words of encouragement. Yeah.
Yeah. We still love you and we want you to be healthy. And if you get healthy, we got things for you to do. And he just need to have he need to know that the door had not been slammed and locked. Keep the door cracked so that the guy's got some hope. And maybe that wasn't the right thing to do. I don't know. That was a choice that I thought was the right way to go. And Vince, luckily enough, in this respect, agreed with me.
Yeah, clearly Vince saw that this guy could be more than even what he was, or he wouldn't have continued to get these opportunities. He does eventually get the opportunity to come back. I'm curious, before he comes back, do you guys fly him in to meet with Vince and everybody look each other in the eye and talk about what we're going to do differently, or is that not necessary?
No, we did. We checks and balances put in place, and your responsibility is this. And there's no more gray area. What more can we talk about? What more can we do? It's up to you, Eddie, to get off this shit.
Yeah.
And get you healthy. And once we get you healthy, man, the sky's the limit.
So he jumps at the chance to come back April 1st, 2002. He's back on Raw. He immediately wins the Intercontinental title from Rob Van Dam a few weeks later at Backlash. And he's back in the game, man. And we covered a lot of Eddie's O2 comeback a few months back here on Grilling JR. So check that out in the archives, but what a cool story to see him back up and running. He moves over to SmackDown in the summer of 2002. And I think you only called one or two more matches of Eddie's career because of that. You guys just wound up on separate shows,
right?
But obviously you're still working closely with him. But man, to think about all those great matches, it would have been cool to see you be the voice of more of those if given the opportunity.
It would have. Sorry, Connie. Yeah, it would have been great. It'd been a dream come true. Cause it's like seeing your kid graduate. You know, that's one of those days. You can't repeat them sometimes. But yeah, I'd like to have been in the SmackDown chair on that night, or him just be on Raw.
Yeah.
But he was SmackDown was a big priority. I mentioned earlier that Rampage is a high priority right now within the confines of AEW.
Yes.
We want to make this Friday night show good and build a loyal audience. And I think we're going to do that. I really do. I enjoy the opportunity. You know, I worked the other day. I did a show with Excalibur and Shivani, and I loved it. Just loved it. We had so much fun. And when you cut your roster of announcers down to three, everything becomes more manageable.
Yeah.
You're not driving in so much traffic. So that was the goal there. And I bring that up because it's part and parcel to what SmackDown was. And Vince wanted to load up SmackDown, hence The Rock. And The Rock was on SmackDown. That was his show.
Right.
So all of a sudden, SmackDown became a higher priority simply because of the array of great talent that was performing on it. So, I think Eddie's presence on SmackDown was specific. Yeah. He had a amazing ability to connect with his Hispanic audience, not just Hispanic audience, but with everybody, but especially his Hispanic fan base. When that happened and it was explained to him, he took great pride in knowing that he was placed on that show for a reason.
Right.
You're important and you can help us build this brand. And anytime you get to know a person in wrestling, one of the great things that we have the opportunity to do occasionally in our career is help build a brand.
Yes.
I mentioned I'm going to help build a Rampage as best I possibly can with every ounce of my being. And Eddie had that same approach with SmackDown. He took an emotional, he made an emotional investment in the show. And I think it showed immensely. He was one of the most, if anybody was more entertaining on SmackDown, it might be The Rock.
Yeah.
That's a big shadow to stand in. But Eddie had no intimidation of that deal, Connie. He was up for the challenge.
So Eddie and his nephew Chavo are going to form Los Guerreros tag team around this time. What'd you think of the team here? I mean, this is fun stuff and certainly great for Chavo as well.
It was great for Chavo. It was great for the tag team division. My only issue was that I'm not so sure that the world was ready for another tag team.
Yeah.
It wasn't a tag team territory, shall we say. So, they never had a bad match. Then of course the injury bug rears its ugly head once again, like everybody's snake bit in the equation.
Well, they win the SmackDown version of the tag team titles at Survivor Series 02 from Madison Square Garden. And Eddie spends most of his time here as a tag team wrestler until the summer, with Chavo and then later Tajiri after Chavo tore his triceps. But somewhere around here, we start to say, hey, wait a minute. Let's pull this guy out of tags. Maybe it's time to strap the rocket to him.
That was my thought.
We know that Chavo's eventually going to turn on Eddie in early 04 and then lose to Eddie at the Royal Rumble. We know Eddie's going to win a miniature Royal Rumble on SmackDown to get a title shot. But just talk about how did the tide turn? Did he have to come back in and prove himself to Vince?
Essentially.
Yeah. Okay.
Essentially, Conrad. It wasn't a free pass. All is forgotten. All is forgiven, but all is not forgotten. If that makes any sense to you.
Yeah.
We were finally being able to unlock that combination to this heart and soul of Eddie Guerrero, and Eddie Guerrero realizing that the opportunity existed in real time, to be the top guy in the territory, the WWE champion was, I just thought an amazing development, amazing development. He was given yet another chance with the most prized possession that Vince had.
Yeah.
The WWE title.
So it happens. I can't believe it happens. Brock Lesnar goes down at No Way Out in San Francisco.
Yep.
This is a big time match. One of the most famous Eddie Guerrero, certainly the most important match in Eddie Guerrero's history. There's been other big moments, many others, but man, winning the WWE title after being released not too terribly long before, overcoming all of that. This is one of the great success stories in wrestling. I mean, this is a guy who bet on himself, pulled the nose up. I mean, just a phenomenal story, but maybe the most unlikeliest story. You take a look at the type of size and performer that Vince really always went with. And they look more like Brock Lesnar. And now here's the guy we're actually calling the next big thing, but he's no longer the next big thing. He's the current big thing. He's your world champ and Eddie's going to beat him.
Yeah.
It's like a movie. Is it not, Jim?
Oh, it is. And it may be to some fans today that aren't familiar with Eddie's work. It may sound absurd, but I think I mentioned earlier, Eddie wrestled bigger than he was.
Yes.
And I think nothing proves that any better than what he did with Brock Lesnar. And the fact that Brock Lesnar had so much respect for Eddie and his abilities that Brock had no issues that I'm aware of to this very day of doing the honors in the Cow Palace, I believe. Because I think Michael Cole called that match. I think it was a SmackDown match.
It was fantastic. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I was there. I was standing down in the shadows, wishing I was calling it, like a little ego guy. But I do wish I'd have called it. I mean, it was personal to me.
Right.
But that's not how the cookie crumbled in that respect. So, but he had a great series of matches with JBL. JBL 6'6".
Yeah.
Who else? He had other big wins over much bigger guys, all because he understood the concept of wrestling and how to tell a story.
Around the same time, the company put out a documentary, Cheating Death, Stealing Life, the Eddie Guerrero story. And we know he's going to have, you know, the book as well, but we're really doubling down on Eric's story or Eddie's story. Was Eddie comfortable telling the whole story, warts and all, about his struggles with addiction? Yeah. Okay.
He seemed to be, Conrad. I think he looked at it as something that could be perceived as cathartic. And, that's my take on it. I'm not aware of any issues that he had with it. And I'm sure if he had serious issues, I'd have heard about
him. Right. It's such a great story. But behind the scenes, I want to talk about how he's dealing with the stress and pressure of being the top guy. Bruce has talked about on his podcast that he felt like Eddie maybe put too much pressure on himself, because once upon a time, the top guy was, you know, whoever held the belt was to quote unquote, get all the credit or all the blame. If business is great, it's all this guy's fault. He drew the house. If business is bad, it's all this guy's fault. He's the shits. And you don't want, after working your whole career to get this spot and this opportunity, you don't want to let it slip through your fingers. And allegedly in those days, Vince would be on the phone with his champion every day. I know Bruce used to talk to Eddie on the regular. You did as well.
Yep.
How did he deal with the stress and pressure of being the guy?
Challenging. It's a lot of responsibility to go on last, especially on a pay-per-view where they've seen everything seemingly, it's hard, and responsibilities are hard. You know, staying out of trouble for some people, hard. So, I think he put a lot undue pressure on himself. If Eddie had just relied on his instincts and his natural ability to work a match, perform at a high level, never been an issue. But this is, Eddie was not wound that way. He was wound tighter than a hat, you know, a fiddle string. So, you know, I don't know how to explain it any better. He mentally was putting so much pressure on himself that he was making himself miserable by being the WWE champion.
What a moment it was. WrestleMania 20. He's going to defeat Kurt Angle. It's a fantastic match. And there's a closing moment of the show. One of the more memorable moments of this era, Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit hugging in the center of the ring. One is the champ of SmackDown. One is the champ of Monday Night Raw. The confetti comes down. It was a storybook ending for these two guys. Of course, that's not the end of their story, but nobody would have ever imagined that they would be in that spot. Would you agree?
Standing in the ring in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
At WrestleMania 20. Are you kidding?
Right.
No. You know, it's a good question, Connor. I'm being an asshole. I'm good at that. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Right.
And I didn't know they were going to have a hug. So to me, it hit me especially emotionally hard. I'm trying to say, and I'm not a wordsmith. I'm a wrestling announcer. that was one of the golden moments. I'm writing this third book.
Yep.
With Paul O'Brien and I. And we're going over, we're trying to come up with some of what the fans perceive to be JR's best calls.
Yep.
And what I had in a meeting this week, I said, I want the fans to be involved in this book more than they have in the past. So let's create a venue for them, a path. So what I'm going to ask here on the show for the first time is you can use Twitter at JRSBBQ. I'm sure Conrad's crew will throw something out there to encourage you to participate. But I'd like to know the fans' opinion of the calls that I made or made with Lawler or made with Heyman or whomever it may be. And text them or tweet them to me because they may make the book. And I think that'd be pretty cool. And because that way I also get a feel for what the fans have memorialized.
Yes.
And that's what we want to write about. The behind the scenes of this call is blank. But what is that call?
Right.
So you guys out there listening and you got an idea or you want to share it with your buddies, all the help is appreciated and necessary, by the way. So I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but Eddie's book I thought was pretty compelling. And I'm glad that he was open and honest enough, comfortable with himself. He started getting more comfortable with himself, Conrad, in those later years.
The pressure after WrestleMania, I mean, I'm sure going into WrestleMania is huge, but it almost feels like we've heard for years and years that Vince would maybe back in the day look from WrestleMania to WrestleMania. So now it's not necessarily what have you done, but what will you do for me next?
Yeah.
And what he's going to be doing next is he's going to be in a feud with John Bradshaw Layfield the next few months. This is when we're essentially hitting the reset button on Justin Hawk Bradshaw and one half of the APA. And now he's this arrogant, almost J.R. Ewing type character, Dallas hateable villain, heel, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Good job. That was a perfect role for JBL.
Yes. Fantastic casting.
Yeah. I'm not knocking him because this is OU Texas week. But he was easy to dislike. He was a great villain and he reinvented himself and he moved up from being a mid-card tag team guy to the most influential heel at that time in WWE and made a great champion because everybody wanted to see him get his ass whipped. And that's the trait you're looking for a heel.
Well, what's great is this Judgment Day 04 match in May of 04, man, this is one of the bloodiest battles in the history of not just WWE, but all of professional wrestling. Guerrero's going to cut himself maybe way too deep and allegedly I think hits an artery. He winds up going into shock and passing out. He's rushed to the hospital. This is an unbelievable performance. I know that, you know, wrestling, a lot of people are debating these days whether or not blood has a place in it. Well, right. It was everywhere in May of 04. It showed you the lengths that Eddie was willing to go to tell a story, to get a match over, to be in the main event, to be the world champ. What were you thinking watching that back and saying, this is a lot of blood?
Too much.
Yeah.
Too much blood. And I'm not knocking those guys. They had a great effort. They told a hell of a story. It was compelling. It was exciting. But I thought at the end of the day, in hindsight being 2020, that it was a little too much. It became, I don't want to say it became distracting, but it kind of took my eye off the prize a little bit.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what we're doing next, because before you know it, Eddie's going to lose the title to JBL the very next month on pay-per-view. Was it too soon? Did Eddie have more legs in him as a champ? Was he upset that the belt's coming off? Was it just time to try something new? Talk me through how he handled that and why.
I think Vince's philosophy, Conrad, was to say that the undersized baby face is more valuable to us chasing the title that he once held than he is being chased. Was kind of the psychology of it. Now, there's a lot of ways to look at it, a lot of right ways to look at it. But I think Eddie being the challenger was not a bad thing. It kept him in the title picture. It kept him in good paydays. It kept him in house show bookings, a lot of wins out of that equation. So, but JBL, you know, it's hard to say anything bad because he made a hell of a champion.
Right.
He did a good job. When you become the most hated man in a company, and your personality is driving it, because, you know, JBL looks so natural in his role that he created, he perfected, that it was seamless. You couldn't see through it. And so he was, again, I told this to Paul Heyman back in the late 80s, God damn, you're easy to dislike.
Right.
And which was meant, and he knows it to this very day, as a supreme compliment, because you don't want to like, you don't want your heels don't have, need to have any too many redeeming social qualities other than being badasses or great athletes.
It's unfortunate that we don't get to see him flirt with more world title opportunities, but boy, he's got the most, maybe the most sports entertainment story of all coming up next. In 05, Eddie and Rey Mysterio start a feud that people are still talking about. Dominic is allegedly actually Eddie's son. And of course, this was famously born out of the time where Eddie was honest about writing in his book that once upon a time he and Vicky were separated. And what if, yeah. And boy, in these crazy wrestling stories, what if one of your best friend's sons was actually your own? They have a ladder match at SummerSlam with custody of Dominic at stake. Vicky Guerrero was introduced into the storyline really for the first time here. I know that this is maybe not something that the Cowboy would have done, or maybe so. Personal issues draw money. That's what they like to say down in Memphis.
If he could put an ass every 18 inches, he'd be all for it.
What do you think of this creatively? We're going to involve, you know, families like this.
Well, I had mixed emotions, I thought it might become too soap opera-ish for my personal taste. But the great thing about it was the payoff. The payoff was that ladder match. My God in heaven. Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio in a ladder match.
How do you beat that? Yeah.
Where are you going to see that again?
Right.
And what's the reason for this match? Well, it had a great reason. It had a wonderful stipulation everybody could understand. And it let two of the greatest workers in the world, in Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio, go out there and do their thing. I don't know. I don't have any idea who the agent was for that match. No clue. I'm sure somebody might know. But my sense is they let Eddie and Ray, write the music and let them roll. They knew what they could do. They knew what they wanted to do. And, it was just a phenomenal ladder match. As good a ladder match as I can remember seeing.
It's a fantastic match, especially with the benefit of hindsight, knowing that Dominic's in the company now and him and Ray are still doing their thing. And
yeah,
boy, as time went on, maybe the biggest blessing of this whole rather silly angle is Vicky Guerrero. You know, I don't think anybody would have guessed she would have been such a phenomenal character, but this is how she's introduced. And man, she became a Hall of Famer in her own right. And it all happened right here.
Another star was born, Conrad. Vicky had, again, we didn't know that Vicky had the acting chops,
right?
The showbiz chops that she had. How would we know? And so, we realized she did, and she became a beloved character, in WWE, just as she's a beloved character right now in AEW. I'm so glad that we have her in our company, because Vicky's mature. She's remarried. She's happy. She's healthy. And she gives a lot of counsel to the ladies of AEW. And I really respect her for that, because, you know, it's tough. It's tough. Counseling people that don't understand the business, perhaps as they will eventually. She's just a terrific, in our company. And, I love her for that. So she's unselfish. She's just like Eddie was, in the sense of being unselfish. Eddie's selfishness was to himself and staying and getting high. Eating those Vicodins like they're goddamn M&Ms.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the unfortunate circumstance of learning that we've lost Eddie at only 38 years old. We talked earlier about Minneapolis. Well, unfortunately, his life ends there as well. November 13th, he's found passed away in his hotel room. I think, as the story goes, his nephew Chavo discovers him. You're not on the road at the time. I don't think you're suffering from or recovering from your colon surgery. Yeah. How do you hear about Eddie Guerrero, this guy he spent so much time with, man, we lose him brushing his teeth.
I'm not so sure that Bruce didn't break that news to me. You know, Bruce and I are working together, and gosh, you look back at when we started working together, it was 30 years now in today's time. But I think maybe Bruce told me. I was that surgery was rough, but it wasn't nearly as rough as getting that news. I'll go through another surgery if I didn't have to hear that. It was just heartbreaking. We were ready. We're 38 years old, Conrad. My God, you know, you and I got old clothes 38 years old, probably.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking. There's no other way to describe it. You just wonder why things end the way they end sometimes. And sometimes there are no answers. And that's what's tough. You don't know the answer. But I think it was if I remember correctly, I think that's another thing that helped change things there at WWE is guys getting full physicals, blood work, and all these things, just make sure their heart's good. So through some of these tragedies, and God knows they were tragedies, some good came out of it because the testing and, you know, Eddie looked great. He was feeling good. No problems that I'm aware of. And as I said, if there were, I would have heard about them. So it's just, it caught up with it. And I think wrestlers today need to take more care of their health and don't think they're bulletproof and invincible. That's my take on that deal. Every company should have a process in place. And I think the big ones do, to make sure they monitor the health of their talents. There's nothing more important in any wrestling company. There's two words, talent and television. I learned that from every boss I've ever worked for. It's all about talent and television.
Let's talk about the Eddie tribute show. What'd you think of it?
Don't remember anything specific about,
just the idea of doing tribute shows to wrestlers. Are you for it? I mean,
I'm not against it.
Yeah.
They're done in a classy way. They're not done to shoot an angle.
Right.
If they're done to honor the memory and the contributions of the individual that's passed away, no issues here with me. And it certainly if anybody deserved it, Eddie did. And, it's just so sad, so sad. And I wanted to be more involved in the whole process, but I was healing. I had 13 inches of my intestines taken out.
Right.
You know, this wasn't no Mickey Mouse, arthroscopic toe surgery. This is serious stuff. And I thought I was in my little wife, Jan, and I heard her tell somebody, she said, I think he's going to die. And man, that sobered my ass up. But it was just my DNA. It was just the way it was. But man, I really missed, I didn't get to go to the funeral. It was tough.
Yeah, I have in my notes here that you were unable to attend the funeral. Of course, still recovering from surgery. So you have, I think, Dr. Tom read something on your behalf. Is that right?
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, I was reading this here again. I remember writing some stuff and communicating. What did I say?
Well, Meltzer had this recap. Ross mentioned that in the 33 years he's been in the business, Guerrero was one of the 10 best performers he'd ever seen. That moment was not without its notable implications. Ross asked Pritchard, who the WWE had fired, to read his thoughts instead of one of the McMahons or Laurinaitis. Vince talked about his passion and in the end said Guerrero was a master craftsman. It's just hard to imagine, man, going to a funeral for a fellow who's just 38 years old, who had so much in front of him. I know you weren't there, but it's gotta be one of the toughest, saddest moment, man.
I wanted to be there. I could travel. So that's how that went down. I appreciate Tom Pritchard, stepping up and, reading that statement, because it meant a lot to me to be represented in some shape, form or fashion. Cause everybody that knows me knows if I had been healthy, I would have been there front and center.
Let's talk about, the drug policy. You know, it's probably or not just the drug policy, but the testing policy, you know, the whole wellness policy that the WWE would develop that we know today, it really started to become fast-tracked and evolve in a very quick manner on the heels of Eddie's death. So while Eddie may have had some sort of a heart issue that we didn't know about at the time, moving forward, performers who work for the WWE had an opportunity to have a heads up on that in large part because of Eddie's passing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it worked. Is this another major slap in the face wake up call? Something has to be done. And again, if you go back and look at that timeline in society in general, it wasn't just a wrestling issue. This was access to drugs, access to dirty doctors, all those things, just became more prominent. But it was just time. And a lot of the older talents were very uncomfortable with it because they knew they were users, but they, in their own mind's eye, had everything under control. And really and truly they didn't.
It's tough to think about. What do you think Eddie's legacy will be? I mean, will it be testing? Will it be the matches that he had with Rey Mysterio winning the title? The Mamacita stuff, the famous Dominic storyline. What's his legacy going to be?
I prefer to think of it, Eddie's legacy, that Eddie Guerrero became the biggest undersized star in the history of wrestling.
Yeah.
We're talking 5'8", Conrad, 5'8". And if you go back and the fans go back and YouTube the Lesnar Eddie match from the Cow Palace, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. He had so many memorable outings with guys. And look, well, I guess you say, well, who did Eddie wrestle that he wasn't smaller than? Well, not many. I can't think of anybody significant for me off the top of my head. But he'll always be, to me, I will prefer to remember him as the great talent that he was, and that he could have great matches with virtually anybody. I know that's almost cliche. Oh, he could have a great match with a broomstick. I used to hear that about Dory Jr. He could have a great match with a broomstick. I don't know if Eddie could or anybody could have a great match with a broomstick, but nonetheless, I just look back at Eddie's body of work being extraordinary. And that's what I prefer to remember him as, not our sessions in a closed locker room where we were talking about, and he was reading his favorite Bible passages and things of that nature to give him some relief. I don't think I've ever told that story before. I guess that'd be another one to put in my book.
Do you still think Eddie top 10 all time in your opinion? I mean,
without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, Connie, without a doubt. Eddie Guerrero would be a main event level talent in any generation that I have personally worked in. And that started in 1974. There's not a generation that I walked through, earned a check from, earned a living from, that Eddie Guerrero would not have been a star. Eddie Guerrero's biggest issue was Eddie Guerrero and the damn pills. Vicodin is our enemy. And it ate him up. And then again, if the right process had been put in place, or have been put in place, hindsight's always going to be 20/20. This would never have happened. Eddie's health issues would have been detected. He'd have got treatment. He'd have got the right medication, the right doctors, everything. If we had known. And again, I mentioned this earlier. So important to remember. And until there's processes in place, it's hard to measure someone's addiction. And that's kind of where I see this thing here with Eddie. If we had known the seriousness of his health and the condition that he was in, things would have ended a lot differently.
Let's get your opinion on the storylines that followed. When Eddie passed away, they started to do some storylines about Eddie posthumously, and that's been criticized. I understand it using it as a motivation for Ray to win the world title and win the Royal Rumble and overcome the obstacles. I can get right behind that. But when you have the heels come out and say, and again, they were scripted to say this, Eddie's in hell.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, man. What's
I know about it. Shits.
Yeah.
As my granny would say, it's even worse. It's the drizzling shits.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. And I thought it was like creativity. There's a lot of ways you could use, this whole matter, make it about Ray and not about Eddie.
Yeah.
But that's not how it went down. So I wasn't comfortable with that personally.
Talk to me about what you think Eddie would be doing today. If he was still here, I'm sure he'd be hanging around the wrestling business somewhere.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What do you think he would think of today's business, and where do you think he would fit in?
It's hard for me to think for Eddie, but I think the answer to the question, he'd definitely be in the wrestling business.
Yeah.
I can see him being a great agent, producer, whatever. I can see him being an amazing asset in a training environment. There are just so many things that he could do. And let's also remember that he would be so influential to these young talents because he's Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero pulled me aside at television and gave me these pointers. They really helped me. And they believed him and they tried to execute him because of the Eddie's endorsement.
Right.
Quite frankly. So I think he'd still be in the business and he could do a variety of roles.
We got lots of questions about Eddie. There's no way we'll get to them all. Adam Lesson wants to know, in JR's opinion, what was one thing that made Eddie stand out the most?
Passion.
Yeah.
Passion. He had it. Passion. Uncontrollable at times, but he had amazing passion. And that's something you can't teach. You can't coach it. You just can't. So I think Eddie's passion is what will always stick with me.
Instagram, a wrestling historian, wants to know, in an alternate timeline, how would you have booked Eddie Guerrero versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 22? That is the match that supposedly Shawn Michaels wanted. And, it's been described by Bruce Pritchard that he often saw Eddie Guerrero as a Hispanic Shawn Michaels. What a match that would have been. What would you have done had it actually happened?
What would mean? Well, is it finish?
Yeah. I mean, do you think this is something where Eddie's a heel, Sean's a baby face, vice versa? You know, what would have been the ideal circumstance to frame up these guys on the biggest stage of all?
Well, hard to say. Probably I'd go with Sean at that time.
Yeah.
At that time, and there's ways to look at that, skin that cat where, Sean would do the honors and work to an amazing return. You can't have a bad equation matching Eddie Guerrero and Shawn Michaels. The least of my worries is the finish. And then finding out the dirt behind the finish. It's just not right. Connie. That'd be a great problem to have.
Yeah. What a problem.
Hey, what if you want an hour draw?
Yeah.
I'm just saying people are rolling their eyes now. Oh, geez. Hey, Eddie Guerrero and Shawn Michaels are two guys that if you were worried about keeping your attention for an hour, don't worry about that. You're going to be fine.
Talk to me about Lindsay's question here. Knowing how close you were with China, how much did she love working with Eddie? Was she hesitant at first? How did they both feel about the storyline and it ending?
Well, over the years, I developed a real strong relationship with Joni. And a lot of it was out of necessity, personal issues, all these things that affected her mindset. But she really enjoyed working with Eddie because she trusted him. And Joni learned a lot about wrestling from, of course, Triple H. But she learned a lot about her craft from Eddie Guerrero. Because Eddie stopped what he was doing to help make sure she was up to speed so that they both as a unit would look better.
Right.
And so I think that I always thought that they just got along great. They're backstage. They'd laugh. They were kidding. They get their script or whatever the ideas, the bullet points, and read it and start laughing and enjoying it and looking forward to executing it. So I think Joni was blessed to be in Eddie's life and vice versa, quite frankly.
Matthew Prong wants to know, did you ever talk to Benoit about Eddie's death?
probably, I don't want to sound like this is just a throwaway. Probably in passing.
I got you.
I mean, we both loved Eddie, and I mean, Benoit was, that was, that helped destroy Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
Eddie Guerrero was passing. So, but in passing, I would say Conrad, to be honest with you, we didn't have a stop. We didn't have a big meeting or let's go to dinner or whatever. Benoit just wasn't that kind of guy. And he knew my sentiments and I knew his, and that was enough.
One last question. Francis Reyes wants to know, when you had to release Eddie the first time, was that the hardest person you ever had to fire? And if not, who was?
No, it probably was, because I saw greatness.
Yeah.
I saw one of the greatest pro wrestlers in the world that we're about to lose if we don't get our arms around his problem. But in order for us to get our arms around his problem, he's got to cooperate with us. He's got to allow us to hug him. And that's what we kept waiting on. So yeah, that was probably the toughest, because I had such an emotional investment in him. And there are others. There's going to be plenty of others. If I stopped and thought about who I'd, how do you find any joy in firing anybody?
No, you can't.
Can't. No. That's a morbid way of living your life, if so.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I think that was the hardest one, especially on today. Today it's really the hardest one, because we've gone back so much and talked about these memories. I hope the fans enjoy getting a little peek behind the scenes of the man that Eddie Guerrero was. And he was absolutely off the page. I hope that his timeline and what people see on social media and shows like this will reacquaint him to the wrestling fan, because he's worth researching.
Oh yeah. Well, I loved it. This was a fun story. We got to brag a little bit about Eddie Guerrero. We hope that you guys dug it as much as we did. And we'll be back next week, man. Going to have a big time letting you guys have the keys to the show. Check it out. Ask JR Anything right here on Grilling JR with the voice of wrestling, Mr. Jim Ross.
Thanks, Connie. Thanks, everybody. And beat Texas.
Roll Tide.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.